This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. This week on Africa Update, the Zambian president dies at the age of 59. He criticized the leadership in neighboring Zimbabwe, so what does his death mean for the southern African region? And Africa is home to one of the most expensive cities in the world. It's pricier than Los Angeles or Miami, and it's in a country where many people live on just dollars a day. Here with the info on both stories is Roxanne Lawson. She's director of Africa Policy for TransAfrica Forum. Hi, Roxanne.
Hi, Farai. How are you?
So let's just do a brief mention about the Zambian president, Levi Mwanawasa. He died in the hospital today in France. He had a stroke 6 weeks ago. How could his death impact Zambia and the region?
Well, Masawana had been positioning himself as a new leader for Southern Africa. And in the SADC region, especially in the last 2 years, as the crisis in Zimbabwe has gotten much worse, he's actually been a strong supporter of the MDC-led faction and actually a strong supporter and critic of ZANU-PF and Robert Mugabe. And so his passing away is quite sad, both for his nation, but also, I think, signals a change in the way that Southern Africa looks at Zimbabwe.
Now, speaking of Zimbabwe, we have been tracking months of political and election-related conflict. And what's the latest on the idea that there could be a power-sharing agreement between ZANU-PF, which is led by the president, Mugabe, and the Movement for Democratic Change?
Well, it appears as if the talks are stalled. No one from either camp is saying the word stalled in public, but they have been adjourned since August 12th. In that time, Morgan Tsvangirai, who is the leader of the one faction of the MDC, the Movement for Democratic Change, has been touring Southern Africa trying to garner more support for the role that he wants to play in the new government. At the same time, we see Arthur Mutambaro, who is the leader of the smaller faction of MDC, which is quite confusing for many people, positioning himself much more closely aligned to ZANU-PF and Robert Mugabe. And so I think civil society, both in the United States, across the globe, and in Zimbabwe especially, has been waiting with bated breath, watching what happens. Especially since, with all of the wrangling and conversation that's going on in part of these conversations, very little is happening on the ground in Zimbabwe for average Zimbabweans. If you can imagine that parliament, although the elections for parliamentary members were completed actually way back in March, parliament has yet to sit and meet in an effective way since then. And so it basically means, if you can imagine that, it states that Congress wouldn't have met for 4 or 5 months.
What does it really mean? We have tracked a bit. We had the chance to speak both with Arthur Mutambara and Morgan Tsvangirai. Tsvangirai, head of the kind of larger, broader faction of the opposition party, and Mutambara, part of the smaller one. And first they were together, and then they were apart, and then they were together, and now it seems they're apart. What does that mean for people who want options other than the current president?
I think on some levels it would appear that it gives people even more options, Zimbabweans more options. But in practice, because ZANU-PF is still so strongly entrenched, because Zimbabwe as a free nation is very young. I mean, it's only had its independence since 1980. I think that the power that ZANU-PF is only strengthened by the split within the Movement for Democratic Change, and it's actually really quite a shame. But I think regardless of what happens, even if the talks are successful and a successful power-sharing agreement comes out of the talks, the real issues, the felt needs of the average Zimbabwean, I think, will not be addressed, as the power-sharing and this kind of government of national unity will really only address the political elites and what their issues are.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about bling. And this is bling African style. We're talking about $200 for an average restaurant meal, apartments renting for $6,000 and $7,000 a month, multimillion-dollar yachts. This is all from a recent New York Times article describing a city of excess. And that city is Lagos, Nigeria. So why is there so much cash on the ground there?
Well, Lagos and most of Nigeria, but Lagos especially, is run on an oil economy. As the U.S. dollar is weakening daily, and the need for consumption of oil, both from the United States and also from other parts of the world, like China and Malaysia, is increasing with rapid numbers, parts of Nigeria and Nigerian economy are able to cash in. And so you have, in places like Lagos, the extremely rich. It's a new playground for the extremely rich in Nigeria. But it's at the expense of the average Nigerian, who in places like the Niger Delta, where the majority of the oil that supports the Nigerian economy comes from, have seen almost little to no impact from the export of oil.
Are the majority of Nigerians living in poverty, or what? I mean, I don't know whether you can use the term average because there are such discrepancies, but how does the life of someone who's living high on the hog in Lagos compare to someone who is living close to the ground?
I think that they're as different as day and night. I mean, across the globe, there are huge global inequities. And, you know, the average really wealthy person in the U.S. is very different from the average poor person. And in Nigeria, it's the same. But when you take into account that the average Nigerian lives on about $2 a day, and in Lagos, the richest pay $15 per drink, per alcoholic beverage, you can see the discrepancies in the way in which people are living. And I think that actually it's this new phase of neoliberalism. This is just a kind of an economic model. This is actually its success story, that you will have large numbers of incredibly rich people. And the African continent has always been home to extremely wealthy people, despite the prevailing myth about, you know, the impoverishment of the African continent. But in Nigeria, you actually see a much more stark separation between the very wealthy and the very poor. Then it's a new African elite.
Let's just touch on a project that your group's been working on. It's called the Stop Vulture Funds Act. Explain what a vulture fund is, first of all.
A vulture fund is actually, I think, something that most U.S. Americans are quite aware of, even though they're not sure that they're aware of it. It's basically what's been happening in the mortgage crisis over the last couple of months. People who are suffering from predatory lending when it comes to their actual mortgages are having to suffer the ravages of the swinging economy. Internationally, these same hedge funds, which we call vulture funds because they kind of prey on weak and poor countries, are cashing in. Essentially, what they're doing is buying sovereign debt, or in the case of the kind of a, for U.S. American terms, they're buying your mortgage. And then they're actually taking you to court to sue you for your mortgage plus interest on your mortgage. They'll take your house and then everything else that you have. In the international context, this is happening to poor countries like Zambia, which had a debt to Romania. That debt was bought by a vulture fund, by a private corporation, who then took them to court to sue them for the amount of their debt, the payment that they made to Romania for the debt, and what we call the arrears or the interest on that debt. It's a huge kind of global loophole, and it actually really undermines good business practices in the United States. And so you have members of Congress, like Congresswoman Maxine Waters and Congressman Conyers, who have been both looking at this issue for the last couple of years and trying to figure out a common sense solution.
Very quickly, where is the bill in terms of being pushed in Congress?
Well, right now the bill is actually looking for co-sponsors. Maxine Waters introduced the bill at the beginning, right before the recess happened. And right now I think that many members of Congress are actually looking to see what it is they can do to stop this. I think that most members of Congress see this is actually a really huge problem, especially those who fought for debt cancellation for impoverished nations. Mm. And they want to make sure that they actually keep unwilling investors from the United States from investing in the worst kind of economic practices, from basically feeding off of the poor of the world.
All right. Roxanne, thank you.
Thank you. Have a wonderful day.
Roxanne Lawson is Director of Africa Policy for Trans-Africa Forum. She was at our headquarters in Washington, D.C.